fighting back against mega developers and too tall proponents that make the Disneyfication of Times Square look like child's play. We also speak with community leaders and journalists from the Lenape Nation, Black Star News, and the People's Organization for Progress, the underreported stories, hidden histories that so often get overlooked. That's just a small snippet of Living for the City, Mondays at 11 a.m. over listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman, host of the Tom Hartman Program. Join me every weekday afternoon at 2 p.m. for feisty debates, my take on the news and issues of the day, and some of the smartest callers in radio. That's the Tom Hartman Program every weekday afternoon at 2, right here on WBAI, Free Speech Radio, 99.5 FM, Pacifica Radio, New York. Tag, you're it.
Do you think it costs to run a one-hour WBAI program four times a month?
I really have no idea.
Well, what do you think?
Four times a month, maybe $2,000?
So, it actually costs $833 a month, $208 per hour, $833 a month. That's why we need your support. Please go to your smartphone and message 41444 and enter WBAI. Again, on your smartphone, if you can text 41444 and enter WBAI, you can become a WBAI listener sponsor, a WBAI buddy. And thank you.
All right, coming up next will be Bike Snob. Just a little bit of a change of pace from Evan's usual music, but we'll get that together. Stay tuned for Bike Snob.
And you're here with listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio, WBAI, The Bike Snob Show. I'm Steve Vaccaro, sitting in for Eben Weiss during his well-deserved break. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about cycling, as always, but also about accountability for causing harm on the road. And this is very timely. We just had an outpouring of grief from our cycling community at the memorial gathering and ride that was held for Jose Alzariz over the weekend. Jose was killed when a teenager who somehow got his hands on a souped-up muscle car just blew through a red light, struck another car, and knocked it into Jose, inflicting fatal injuries. And by all accounts, Jose was an accomplished and insightful and beautiful human being who was a tragedy for us all to lose, especially for his family and his loved ones to lose. And hundreds of cyclists came out over the weekend on Sunday to pay respects to him and to demand that there be accountability for drivers. And as many of us know, there are a variety of ways that we can address danger on our streets. It's often known as the three E's: engineering, enforcement, and education. engineering means changing the design of the roadway so that it calms traffic. It limits the opportunities to speed. It makes drivers more mindful. And those engineering fixes are important and are being pursued at a pace that we can argue about whether it's fast enough. It wasn't enough to save Jose, but that engineering work proceeds. Educational work raises people's awareness. It's very important because ultimately we give people the power to kill each other by allowing them to drive these multi-ton or thousands of pounds motor vehicles around the streets in a pedestrian-rich urban environment. And at the end of the day, people have to be accountable for their own actions. And by giving them the velocity and the mass that come with those motor vehicles, we give them a tremendous power to do harm. And that's not what always happens when people use motor vehicles, but it often happens, resulting in motor vehicles causing the bulk of accidental, we should say sudden death on our streets. Whether they are accidents is something that's open for debate, whether that is the proper term. The third approach, the third E, is enforcement. And many in the cycling and safe streets community were glad to see that Kings County District Attorney Eric Gonzalez announced that there would be charges brought against the teenager who struck and killed Jose Alzari's one car removed. So I am personally ambivalent about our criminal justice system. I think that the burdens of our criminal justice system fall disproportionately and unfairly and discriminatorily on working class people, poor people, people of color, people who are not authorized to be in this country. And I do not like, as a general matter, throwing people in jail. I don't think that it is a civilized way to deter people from causing harm or to visit accountability on people. I think that sometimes it is necessary. So I am not passing judgment on any particular punishment that should be meted out to the teenager who caused this tragic death. But certainly there needs to be some kind of official statement of accountability, that if you behave recklessly with a deadly, lethal machine and you cause death, government has to stop. It has to take notice. It has to take that instrumentality out of your hands immediately and not let you drive away from the scene. And there has to be some kind of legal process that declares for everyone who's watching, this is wrong, this can't be done, this is far beyond the pale, and there has to be an official government response. And that's what's going to happen in this case involving Jose Alzariz and some other victims who were also struck and injured that we don't hear too much about, but I understand that all of them survived. And I hope that they will survive and recover. In New York City, we have a split system for dealing with incidents of traffic violence like this. The cases involving fatalities, such as the one that killed Jose Alzariz, are sent to a specialized group of police officers and detectives known as the Collision Investigation Squad. They handle 200 to 300 cases a year, fatal and near-fatal crashes, and they do a reasonably good job of investigating those cases, and I think more often than not, they come out with the correct conclusions about who was at fault for those collisions. It isn't always the driver to the last one. The vast bulk of collisions that cause severe, serious or other types of injuries, thousands and thousands of cases in New York City each year, are not handled by the Collision Investigation Squad. They don't receive a meaningful investigation at all. They are handled by officers assigned to the precincts throughout the city. And in those cases, those officers have extremely limited time, interest, and ability to create meaningful consequences or accountability for the drivers who caused that harm. And that's the problem that I'm going to focus on today. I'm an attorney who represents pedestrians and cyclists who are struck by motorists and injured on the road. Our law office of Acar and White has been representing them for over 20 years, and I've gotten a great deal of experience with the system that we use for creating accountability for drivers. And the overwhelming primary focus of our system is civil liability. A driver struck you, driver hurt you, you've got a lawsuit. Go find a lawyer, go bring a lawsuit, get some money, get on with your life. The law enforcement criminal justice system is not for you. And police have rules that they have developed, essentially work rules, to remove themselves from this whole class of incidents of traffic violence. They have something I call the observed violation rule. I don't think it's written down anywhere, but I've had it stated to me by representatives of the NYPD Legal Bureau, lawyers who work for the cops. And I've seen it in action so many times that I'm quite certain it exists. The observed violation rule is the belief on the part of police officers that a summons for a traffic violation will not be upheld in Department of Motor Vehicles traffic court, where these things are heard, unless the police officer actually observed the violation take place. If a police officer didn't watch the violation, there's no ticket that can issue. And I asked a NYPD Legal Bureau lawyer, what if a driver goes through a red light, strikes someone, the police then respond to the scene and ask the driver what happened. Then the driver says, I went through the red light and I struck him, and here's my signed confession to that effect. And I was told, no, there will be no traffic ticket issued, because even an admission, a written admission of guilt by a driver that they went through a traffic light, is not enough in the context of a traffic violation. So that's why police officers, generally speaking, write tickets in these what we call ticket traps. They hide behind the bushes or in a car with darkly tinted windows, and they wait for people to do something illegal, and then they jump out and they've observed the violation and the ticket will stick. And of course, this can be time consuming and inefficient. So what they do is go to a spot where people are breaking the law in a manner that probably isn't very unsafe, but is technically illegal. And so everyone's doing it. Everyone's breaking the law because it's safe to do it in that spot under those circumstances. And then the officers can write however many tickets they feel they need to write that day or were told to write that day. And then they can finish up for the day. And people say, why, you know, people get stopped by the officers in these situations and say, what about him? Look at that guy. He just went through that light. Why are you writing me a ticket for doing something that was safe? You know, the police, they don't want to hear that, because, you know, their job, as so many of them understand it, is not to make the streets safer in any kind of direct way of policing dangerous activity. Their job is to write the tickets they're told to write, and that's what they do. And so with this system of no traffic tickets for people who injure and maim people on the streets, short of a fatality, with this observed violation rule, the street safety community got together about 5 years ago and said, we need to pass a law that will reclassify harmful driving conduct from a traffic violation into a crime. And we helped draft and supported and advocated for and won passage with our city legislators of the right-of-way law. And the right-of-way law creates an unclassified misdemeanor, the lowest level of criminal penalty, the same penalty that applies for someone who rides a bicycle on the sidewalk, unclassified misdemeanor, public urination, unclassified misdemeanor, open container in the park, unclassified misdemeanor. This is a low level of crime. And the idea was just, let's just change the classification. So now that it's a crime, police officers will not say, oh, we have an observed violation rule. Because of course, no one would accept police officers saying we have to observe a crime in order to charge a crime. No one would say a police officer has to see a murder or an assault before there can be charges for murder and assault if there's an admission, a signed confession, or a videotape, or eyewitness testimony. Of course, officers virtually never witness crimes, and yet crimes are prosecuted. So why is traffic crime so different? So we created this class of traffic crime, which is violating the right-of-way of a cyclist or pedestrian with the right-of-way law. And what I'm going to talk about in the show, and what I'm going to show you or play for you, is some audio from a hearing where a driver who gets one of these charges goes, and you'll see what happens and how the judges treat them. And you'll see how cyclists are transformed through this bizarre law enforcement system we have and this special exception status for motoring traffic violence, how cyclists get transformed from the victims to the perpetrators of traffic danger on our streets. Okay, we're going to go to a break now, but I hope you'll be calling in later. Our studio line is 212-209-2877, and there's more coming. Back at listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial. This is the Bike Snob Show. I'm filling in for Evan Weiss on vacation, Steve Vaccaro. And I was talking about traffic violence and the enforcement and system of accountability that we have for drivers who cause harm on the street. And I'm going to talk about a case involving a client of mine who was riding a bicycle on Nassau Avenue about 15 months ago in Brooklyn. Nassau Avenue eastbound, about to reach the intersection with McGinnis Boulevard. Those of you who live in Greenpoint or Brooklyn know that McGinnis Boulevard is a traffic sewer. Okay, it is not a neighborhood street, even though there's people who live on it and wish that they could live peacefully on it and safely. It is a roadway that connects the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway with the Pulaski Bridge. And there are three lanes, at least, of traffic in each direction. Drivers routinely exceed the applicable speed limit on that roadway. And they behave in a manner that makes it, I think, unsafe most of the time to bicycle or even walk there. And I have had, and my partner has had, my law partner, numerous cases involving cyclists and pedestrians injured on McGinnis or near McGinnis Boulevard. So this woman was on her bicycle. She approached the light controlling the intersection of Nassau and McGinnis, and she saw up towards the front of the light an enormous truck, a giant flatbed intended to carry fabricated sheet metal and other steel products that was at the light. She did not try to slip up alongside that truck to the front of the line of traffic the way we sometimes do as bicyclists in order to be visible to the drivers, and she didn't try to ride alongside that truck She safely stayed behind it, waited for the light to change, and this truck was signaling a left turn. The truck pulled out into the intersection while signaling a left turn, and after the front of the cab reaching approximately the median, which is a concrete-separated median dividing the two directions of travel on McGinnis Boulevard, it suddenly made a right turn. Now, at this point, she had moved up, and she had just entered the intersection. Mm-hmm. She had just crossed the western curb line of McGinnis Boulevard. There's a gas station there on the corner. She was very close to the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. She was aware that this was a large and dangerous truck, but the truck was signaling left. She was going straight. You know, to all appearances, the truck was about to clear the intersection, and she could follow behind it safely, and then suddenly it turned right. And something that she was not prepared for is the wide turning radius of a truck like this that makes a right turn, which means that even when it seems like you're clear of the truck suddenly starts to swing back towards you as it makes the right turn. And the rear wheels of this enormous multi-ton flatbed truck ran over her foot. She fell over onto the sidewalk. She was that close to the sidewalk, trying to stay out of the way of traffic, but it ran over her foot. There was a driver of a sedan who was right behind her and this truck who saw everything. The sedan driver, we brought him in. We got his sworn testimony, and you'll just have to believe me that what I described was the course of events is exactly the sworn testimony that he gave. And interestingly, he was a fellow who had run a trucking and logistics company for a living and understood trucks. And he was quite certain that that truck was signaling left and then suddenly turned right and ran over this woman's foot. Police came to the scene. And the police, based on the testimony of this witness and others at the scene, including a crossing guard, issued a charge to the truck driver for violating the right-of-way. This is the charge I was talking about before the break. It's an unclassified misdemeanor. It is codified at Section 19-190 of the New York City Administrative Code, which are the collected laws that are passed by our New York City Council. And the penalties for violation of the right-of-way law are $250 if found guilty and up to 30 days in jail. I have never heard of anyone spending any time in jail as a result of pleading guilty to or being convicted of a right-of-way law charge. In addition, inserted into this bill or this legislation, not by the advocates who pushed for it, but by legislators and unelected lawyers who work for the City Council Legislative Drafting Unit, was a provision that allows police officers, using their discretion, to decide that a ticket should be sent for civil penalties only to an administrative tribunal called the Environmental Control Board, as opposed to sending the summons to summons court, which is a kind of low-level criminal court. So if you get a summons for, again, these very common violations in New York City, public urination, possession of a small amount of marijuana, open container in the park, you're going to go to summons court, and you go in there, and it's like a low-level criminal trial, and usually you plead down to a violation. Advocates like me believed that simply the process of having to go in and do that would be enough to make people stop and take note and see, I should be driving more carefully. That was the goal of the right-of-way law. But officers, apparently under an agreement that was made with the district attorneys, and I don't have this firsthand, but the lore is that the police got together with the district attorneys in each county in New York City and said, with these right-of-way law charges, we're going to have a lot of them, so let's decide that they should all go to the Environmental Control Board so that these summons courts, which are already overburdened with all the other low-level crimes in New York, don't have to deal with them. And that's exactly what the police are doing, except for the Collision Investigation Squad. You remember, they handle fatal and near-fatal collisions. I'm talking about the thousands of severe injury collisions, like having your foot run over by a 10 or 20-ton truck with every single bone in it broken and not being able to walk normally for the rest of your life when you're 30 years old. when I describe the circumstances of this woman. So the Environmental Control Board holds hearings using judges from another city agency called OATH. That stands for Office of Administrative Tribunals and Hearings. And the OATH administrative law judges are supposed to act like real judges. They're supposed to apply the law. They're supposed to apply ordinary due process. They're supposed to hear evidence. They're supposed to make decisions in these cases. And what we have found, what journalists have found through the through the Freedom of Information Law and through their OATH's own publicly available data, is that the vast majority, thousands of these right-of-way law charges have been dismissed. The reason they're dismissed is the police officers, after writing the summons at the scene of the collision, based on the evidence and the eyewitness testimony they've collected, just like in this case I've been talking about, the police don't show up. The driver shows up, the judge is there, and there's no police officer to give the testimony, and the rules of evidence say you have to make your case. If the government doesn't show up and put forward the evidence and make the case, there's no prosecution. You're free to go. So why don't police show up at these hearings? When you get a traffic ticket, the police show up at the Department of Motor Vehicles to prosecute the traffic ticket. When you are riding a motorized electric bicycle and the police seize your electric bicycle because it's illegal, those tickets also go to the Environmental Control Board, and the police show up at those hearings. And when they lose at those Environmental Control Board hearings, a very interesting series of articles in The Gothamist about how the police then even take an appeal and try to go beyond the Environmental Control Board to get the penalties reinstated, because they are all over electric bicycles. And that is an evil that needs to be tamed in the city. And the police are there, and they've got their police lawyers there, and they're going to make sure that there are meaningful penalties applied to these dangerous operators of e-bicycles on the streets of New York. I'm trying to remember the last time a motorized bicyclist killed someone. But when it comes to drivers who severely maim cyclists or pedestrians, the police just don't show up. And they were asked in a recent report in the city limits, why is it they don't show up? And they said, oh, well, we have to be asked by the agency to show up. Huh? It's just a bunch of finger pointing going on. I mean, the police officers, I know, lose vacation. They get penalized if they don't show up at the DMV. They get penalized if they don't show up where they're supposed to and do their job, show up in court to prosecute real crimes. But this right-of-way law has turned into a joke where police officers can say, oh, it goes to the ECB, and then it just disappears into a black hole. They never show up. The tickets are dismissed. And the only right-of-way law charges that are ever upheld are when the driver just pleads guilty without even going in. But if they test the procedure, and I'm almost reluctant to say this because I know there's some drivers out there who are going to hear this, and it isn't just evil people twirling their black handlebar mustaches. My sister got one of these right-of-way law violations. She got off. She didn't need a lawyer. She didn't need to do anything. She went in and she told the story, and the judge was like, I'm going to let you go, and there's no cop here. So that's it. So this law is a joke, and it needs to be fixed. And we're going to go to another break. And what I'm going to do when we come back is play for you the audio recording of the hearing of one of these, this right-of-way law case that I just got through the Freedom of Information Law. And what's remarkable about this one is, once again, the cop doesn't show up. But I guess, these judges at the Environmental Control Board or OATH, they got some time on their hands. So even though a judge in that circumstance, where there's no prosecutor in effect, no police officer there to give evidence, should just say, okay, ticket dismissed, next. She was sort of bored and she said, well, is there anything you want to tell me about this collision? Anything you want to tell me about? And she gets in a discussion with the driver, who's Spanish speaking. They use a translator, so it is a little bit cumbersome to listen to. But I'll ask you when we get back from the break to listen to the back and forth between this judge at the Environmental Control Board from the Office of Administrative Tribunals and Hearings, inviting, not just inviting this driver to exonerate himself without any record, without anyone to tell a different story, but literally asking him leading questions, putting the words in his mouth and showing him how to blame his victim. And this is, you'll see it, you'll hear it, this is how we turn the victims of traffic violence into the perpetrators of traffic violence. This is why so many people believe that pedestrians and cyclists are the cause of danger and chaos on our streets, and the answer is to limit control and license them and penalties for walking on the street while looking at your cell phone and things of this nature, when the obvious answer is that we need to have much stricter regulation and accountability of the use of motor vehicles, which because of their mass and velocity are killing machines in a city like New York City. So let's go to the break. When we come back, I hope some of you will be calling in to discuss what we're about to hear. It's 212-209-2877. Okay, finishing up the Bike Snob Hour at the bottom of the hour. We're at WBAI listener-sponsored non-commercial radio, 99.5 on your FM dial. We've got a studio line, 212-209-2877. We see some folks have already called in. I'm pushing off the calls because I really want to get this all out on the table so that folks have a chance to react to what we're about to listen to. What I'm about to ask our audio producer to play is an audio file made of a hearing at the Environmental Control Board where the administrative law judge is explaining that there is a problem with the prosecution of the right-of-way law ticket or violation that was charged against the driver who ran over this cyclist's foot. Ordinary rules of adjudication would call for a dismissal of the ticket, which is the big problem. But you will hear now an even worse problem, and you'll get an idea of what happens, or what would happen, I think, if these tickets went forward, because you'll get a hearing of what the judge does with these tickets and with the ideas of traffic danger. And it doesn't sound anything like an ordinary hearing you might have encountered at the Motor Vehicle Bureau or Department of Motor Vehicles or any similar sort of hearing or process that you've been involved in. Why don't you play the tape now?
Is that, I mean, I will tell you that, you know, there are legal issues with this ticket, which is why I told you I would look at them and then just asked if you wanted to tell me anything about the facts.
Muy bien, entonces la razón que yo le dejo saber eso es porque con este tipo de multas sí puede haber algunos tipos de problemas legales, más sin embargo es por eso que yo le preguntaba si es que usted tenía algo que decirnos o preguntar acerca de los hechos.
No, el accidente que yo tuve, yo no vi la persona, yo iba doblando y no vi la persona cuando se metió.
I didn't see the person. I didn't see them when they got in.
Okay. So here you hear the driver being invited to just chat about what happened in this motor vehicle collision. To his credit, he didn't do what I hear many drivers do in the course of my work, which is make up some crazy story about what the cyclist or the pedestrian did. Instead, the driver said, you know, I didn't see them and they got hit, which is really what most drivers, if they're honest, have to say about a collision. There are certainly road rage cases. There are intentional strike cases that I've dealt with. They're the minority of the cases. Most drivers do not want to strike people for a variety of reasons, besides just being human beings and not wanting to injure another human being. It's a hassle, and it costs you money when you strike other people. And this driver made this absolutely terrible error and changed this woman's life forever. And now here he is. He's worried about his insurance. He's worried about his license. He's a professional driver. And the judge said, well, there's a problem with this ticket. Don't worry about those things. You know, the ticket, as we find later, is going to be dismissed because the police officer doesn't show up and she doesn't even have a copy of the ticket. But while she's here, while we're all here, why don't you just tell me what happened? And now I'm going to ask to go to
15 minutes. Yeah, to 17. I'm sorry, go to 17 minutes on the tape.
And we'll hear a little bit of the back and forth in the discussion about what happened.
Sí, una bicicleta era. Ella venía cruzó.
Now, was she going the same way you were, or was she crossing the street against the light?
Muy bien, entonces ahora, ¿ella se dirigía a la misma dirección que usted o ella estaba cruzando la calle?
No, yo iba a doblar a la derecha y ella venía, cruzó de frente, pero cuando ella cruzó, yo no la vi.
No, I was driving on the right side and she crossed, but when she crossed, I didn't see her.
Okay, but she crossed in front of you and she did, you had the right of way?
Entonces, cuando ella cruzó, usted tenía el derecho.
Was she, oh, let me rephrase that. Was she going across Nassau, or did she just sort of swerve out in front of you?
Ahora, déjeme poner eso en otras frases. Ahora, ella, cuando sucedió eso, ¿iba solamente cruzando o solamente se le metió enfrente?
Ella cruzó y yo no la vi. Yo la vi ya cuando yo le di, fue que yo le di, porque yo no la vi, ya se metió porque la luz no estaba para ella. Ella estaba en esa walk.
She crossed and I didn't see her. The moment I saw her was when I had already hit her. I had the right of way because the light had changed and she was in the sidewalk.
So she actually was trying to cross Nassau.
Mm-hmm.
Entonces, ella lo que estaba tratando de hacer era cruzar.
circumstances.
She was running the red light, like she running the red, yeah. New York bicyclists.
So she was trying to run the red light like so many New York bicyclists, are the words that the judge puts into the mouth of this driver after asking, so you had the right of way? So the bicyclist was trying to cross Nassau against the red light? So she just swerved out in front of you? It's what a lawyer calls leading questions, okay? It's basically testifying for the witness. You know, you're not trying to get at the truth. You're just trying to construct a record that will support the conclusion you've already reached. And how many times in our criminal justice system have we had people jailed or imprisoned through a system that puts false testimony into the mouths of witnesses and bears false witness and manufactures crime out of innocent conduct? And here we have the same system using the same methods to manufacture guilt and fault on the part of the cyclist who was crushed by this truck driver, even though she was behind him. She was crushed by his rear wheel, crossing her path. She was not going against the light. She was going in the same direction as the motorist. She had the light just like he did. And to his credit, he said, I didn't see her until after I hit her. So how does he know anything about what she was doing? She was behind him. But here, the so-called judge at the Environmental Control Board is going to, in her spare time, because it's a boring day, she's dismissed too many of these right-of-way law charges for people who've lost hands or feet or arms to reckless drivers, and she's just been dismissing their tickets because the cops haven't even shown up to explain what happened. Well, now she's going to have a little chat with this driver and put in his mouth a story about cyclists causing traffic danger and causing their own injuries. And that's the system we have for creating accountability for drivers for the harm they cause. All right. So now it's time to see if anyone has any remarks they want to make about what we've just heard. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm so glad I finally got in.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
Okay. My name is Thomasina, and I'm from Bergen County. And I totally disagree with almost every single thing you said. I think that you are looking through one lens, and that is a litigious lens. And that's because you're a lawyer. So your perspective, I believe, is totally skewed. And here's what I have to say. I grew up in New York City.
Okay, please hurry up. Please hurry. I've heard all the preliminaries. Keep going. I want to hear it because
no,
we have a lot of callers.
No, you're not going to interrupt me.
I'm not?
Okay, so I've been waiting
okay, cut
a long
it off.
Time. So
okay, I'm sorry, but there's only so much time on the show, and I want to give, and if you've heard me before, I give people a chance to express their point of view, and then I try to respond to it. If you're telling me I just look through a litigious lens because I'm a lawyer, look through it the lens of my client whose foot is crushed, okay? She's not a litigious person. In fact, she's from Sweden, where they don't even have lawsuits like this. And they have meaningful enforcement against reckless drivers. And the caller who says that this is just trying to create litigation out of something is ignoring the fact that cars are killing and maiming more people than any other technology that we have in use here in New York City. Okay? So we're going to go to the next caller. WBI, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Richard Stowe, and I'm calling from the city formerly known as Lake Worth, Florida.
Okay.
I think you've pretty much said it all in terms of this enforcement and the legal system and your reference to laws in Europe, which are considerably different than the United States. But with regard to the intersection, roundabouts are an engineering design that, like, create a different set of circumstances, and you can't run through a red light in a roundabout. There are no red lights, and so I think I haven't heard much about mini roundabouts, modern roundabouts, or any type of roundabouts in New York City design circles. Can you comment on that?
Sure.
And then I just want to say one last thing, and that is that you talked about the three E's, engineering, enforcement, and education. Well, there's a fourth E, and that's ecologic. And that's like how nature frames the streets. That's another issue in terms of calming that I think is a long-term investment that has like multiple benefits.
Okay, thanks very much for your comment. There's no question but that there are engineering fixes to the kind of collision that I just described. You could have a separated bike path with a split signal phase so that first cyclists proceed through the intersection and second motorists proceed through the intersection so that they're never mixing. That can become inefficient and it can slow everything down. The question of whether it's worth it or not is one for policymakers. Sometimes when I'm riding, I hit a split phase and I have to wait and there's no traffic and it's frustrating to me. And sometimes I'm very glad to have that split phase and know that a driver is probably going to follow the red left turn arrow and not drive across my path. Ultimately, it would be best if we could count on people to take care, especially professional drivers who do this for a living. As far as the ecological aspect of driving and or traffic, you know, there is an art as well as a science to managing people's traffic interactions. I just think that one of the biggest problems we have is that it is considered acceptable to lie about traffic interactions that go wrong after the fact. Mm-hmm. And as a lawyer, my job is to go in and question people under oath, and I meet people. After I explore their background, I'm convinced that they are honest-seeming, upstanding people, and then they tell the most crazy lies. And I know it because there's videotape that surfaces afterwards, or there's other eyewitnesses, or it simply defies the laws of physics and logic, the way that they describe the collision occurred. So there is a culture of lying surrounding traffic interactions, unfortunately, and people just feel like it's okay because if they were to admit their guilt, well, then it's just the insurance company that's going to end up getting more money because they'll have to pay more for insurance. So what's the point of that? It's not going to make the person get their foot back or their hand back or whatever. So what's the point? I don't really know what goes through the minds of these people who lie when they get dragged into a civil case, but I do wish that the government would do its job and apply some meaningful consequences through proceedings like the one I just played for you at the Environmental Control Board. Let's go to another caller. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Good morning. My name is Cecilia, and I'm in Brooklyn.
Hi there.
I'm calling to congratulate you on your show. You're hitting it all on the nail. Everything you have said, I am living, and I'm sure other people are living. I was struck by a vehicle that did not yield. I waited for my light. I did everything right. And I'm going through everything you just said. We don't feel it until it happened to us. So what we need to do is try to fix the problem. It's very hard. It's a lot to do, but we need safe streets.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your call. And what I find, especially in cases where families come to me who've lost a child or a spouse or a parent to being struck and killed by traffic violence, oftentimes people's attitudes and feelings about what should be done change over time. Mm-hmm. It is not unusual for people to be extremely angry and bitter about the suddenness with which their loved one is ripped away from them, ripped away from their family, the way they're left without support if it was a breadwinner, without support if it was a homemaker or a mother taking care of children, and now this person is without help, without support. Their lives are just torn apart, and they want vengeance. They don't put it that way, but that vengeance is that primitive brand of justice where you want to do back to the person who did to you. And that is not really the way our justice system is supposed to go. I mean, my view is that the goal should be people have accountability for the harm that they cause, but most importantly, there is a general deterrence effect so that everyone looks and sees and says, we have to be more careful. I don't want to be the person who does that. That's why I ride a bike. I don't want to make a mistake, not pay attention, you know, just through a moment of inattentiveness, injure someone. I don't have that mass and velocity that would allow me, and I don't ride in a manner that would allow me to injure or kill people. And I think that's one of the most attractive things about riding a bike around New York. I'm free of that. And I wish people would think about how dangerous driving is and the harm they do to someone like the caller we just heard. We need to have a justice system that gets it just right. Not vengeance, not an eye for an eye, and not, you know, having a little chat with a driver where, tee-hee, let's make some jokes about cyclists always going through red lights because it's a slow day down here at the administrative courthouse. Let's have meaningful consequences and do what the law was intended to do. Let's go to the next caller.
Hello?
WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Sandy. I'm from Brooklyn.
Hi, Sandy. What's on your mind?
I listened to the tape with the case where the judge was leading the witness.
Could you please speak up?
Hi, I listened to the tape where the judge was trying to paraphrase the statement that the person was making to her and making new words come out of his mouth that he didn't even say in Spanish that was translated into English. But what I was also hearing was that if I wanted to ask, was the person there who got their foot run over, and where was their lawyer?
That's an excellent question. In these proceedings, you know, the victim is not considered to be a party. The only parties are the state, who's prosecuting the case, and that's supposed to be the cop who wrote the ticket, who showed up the scene, who didn't show up, and then the other party is the driver. The
what?
Victim is not allowed to be there. The victim receives no notice, and that's one of the biggest problems with these proceedings. If I had gotten notice of this, I would have been there. My client, I think she might have come back from Sweden to be there, to sit in at the hearing, to hear what that driver had to say. And perhaps the judge would not have engaged in such a trivializing approach to this whole tragedy of her having her foot run over because someone is deciding, left turn, right turn, which will it be? Maybe he's looking at his phone. Why wasn't the judge asking him, weren't you paying attention? The reason why is the judge didn't even have the record in front of her. She didn't hear that the driver first signaled left. She didn't hear that the cyclist was behind her. She didn't hear any of the information that the cop gathered at the scene. Because the cop gathered it, he put it in a ticket, and then it went into the black hole, and he didn't show up. Because why show up if you don't have to? Because no one cares whether or not there's any serious accountability or consequences for traffic violence. That is the statement that our system is making every hour of every day as these thousands of right-of-way law cases go through the administrative tribunal system. Let's go to another caller. WBAI, you're on the air.
I've been waiting. Yeah, I'm waiting.
And now you're on. What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the Bronx, New York City, okay? The first name is Israel.
Israel, what's on your mind?
Okay, according to what I'm listening to on the radio now, okay, I've been living in the city for the past 73 years. I grew up here.
Uh-huh.
I have seen many, many things happen. Everybody's at fault at one time or another, okay? Everybody seems to be, they think they know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. There's disrespect for everybody. I've seen cyclists weaving in and out through on the sidewalk by people, even in heavy traffic. Nobody gives a damn. They go through the red light. Doesn't matter, okay? But then by the same token, motorists do that, especially in today where there's so many, many, many people here now, okay, that some of them don't even understand our laws. Just came into the country and they think they know everything.
Okay. Well, I appreciate what you're saying. And, in fact, there is... there is a job we can do with education. You mentioned people don't know what the laws are. I agree. It seems to me that uptown where I live and in the Bronx, people think that it's legal to pull a U-turn. And the cops seem to think it too, because they sit there and watch it happen all the time. U-turn across the double yellow, one of the most dangerous maneuvers that you see in New York City, injures a lot of people. Drivers do it all the time. As far as there being traffic misbehavior, misconduct, potentially harm-producing conduct on the part of everyone, absolutely. I've been living not for 73 years. I'm only 54 years old, but I've been living in New York City all that time. I see people doing it, pedestrians, cyclists, motorists. Look, the city is getting more and more crowded. The question is, what are we going to do about it? Are we just going to watch the number of people who get maimed and killed increase each year because, oh, that's life in the big city? No, we have to do something about it. And our administration with the Vision Zero program is trying to do something about it. But what a terrible failure and disaster it is to enact a law and say we're going to have consequences and accountability for drivers, and then to run this kangaroo court where drivers come in and have their alibi and exonerating statements stuck into their mouths by these judges who have nothing better to do. We have got to fix this. I'm looking forward to hearing what Eben Weiss has to say about cycling in New York next week when he's back in. Thanks so much for the opportunity. You're listening to WBAI listener-sponsored radio 99.5 FM on your radio. Have a good week.
August 26th will mark the 99th anniversary of women finally winning the right to vote after a struggle of 72 years. On Monday, August 26th, from 8 to 10 p.m., join the Joy of Resistance for a special on this rich history. We will speak with Sally Roche Wagner on her acclaimed new book, The Woman's Suffrage Movement. We'll present a play with period music, where you'll hear the actual words of Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and others, as after the Civil War, they debated whether to push for black men or white women getting the vote, or to hold out for everyone getting it. So tune in on Monday, August 26th, 8 to 10 p.m., for a new look at the fight for women's suffrage and what we can learn from it today. Thank you.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman, host of the Tom Hartman Program. Join me every weekday afternoon at 2 p.m. for feisty debates, my take on the news and issues of the day, and some of the smartest callers in radio. That's the Tom Hartman Program every weekday afternoon at 2, right here on WBAI, Free Speech Radio, 99.5 FM, Pacifica Radio, New York. Tag, you're it.